Welcome to the Deep Dive. We're the show where we plunge into complex ideas and, well, bring you the insights that matter. Today, we're venturing into a world where chaos seems to rule. Think about the churning, unpredictable currents of turbulent water, maybe.
Or the erratic, wild swings of a stock market.
Exactly. Or even those intricate, sort of fractal-like growth patterns you see in crystals.
Right. And deep within these seemingly random phenomena, mathematicians have long suspected there's a hidden order, a fundamental structure.
But here's the snag, right? The problem was that many of the core equations describing these things are notoriously, well, rough.
Singular, yeah. Making them practically impossible to solve with our classical mathematical tools.
For decades, these equations were just a nightmare, throwing up infinities, nonsensical answers.
A real brick wall for classical maths. That's right. The core challenge we're grappling with today is that many stochastic partial differential equations, or SPDEs.
SPDEs, right.
Which are absolutely crucial for understanding these dynamic random systems, are what we call ill-posed.
Ill-posed.
Meaning, our standard mathematical tools simply fail. They don't give them a rigorous, unique, meaningful interpretation.
Like trying to measure something that's constantly, infinitely wiggling.
Exactly like that. Imagine a piece of string vibrating at every single possible frequency at once. Classical math just didn't have the language or, you know, the lens for it.
But that, thankfully, is not the end of the story. Because we're here to talk about a groundbreaking mathematical theory.
A real game changer.
What's known as regularity structures. It's emerged to finally provide a mathematically rigorous framework for these seemingly unsolvable problems.
Exactly. So our mission today is to unpack this revolutionary theory. We'll explore its core ideas and show you how it has unlocked a completely new understanding of fundamental processes in physics.
Consider this your streamlined path, your shortcut to grasping this complex, but utterly fascinating area of modern mathematics. So let's unpack this a bit more. When we talk about these ill-posed equations and this roughness, what are we really up against fundamentally? Is it just tricky math or is it something deeper?
That's a great clarifying question. Yeah. It's more than tricky. In classical terms, it's often fundamentally undefined.
Undefined. Wow.
Yeah. We're up against functions or distributions that are so incredibly irregular, so rough, that basic operations we take for granted in calculus, like multiplication, differentiation, they just don't make sense.
Okay.
Many SPDEs involve what we call singular inputs. A prime example is space-time white noise.
Space-time white noise. That sounds intense. Can you paint a picture for us? What is that?
Okay, imagine the static on an old analog TV screen. Those random flickering dots everywhere.
Yeah, total chaos.
Pure noise, right. Now, imagine that static isn't just fixed in space, but it's also constantly changing, totally unpredictably, at every single point in time.
Whoa.
It's basically space-time white noise, an incredibly rough, completely random input, and it's what really drives these systems into chaos.
Okay.
The issue arises when you try to do math with it, like multiply or differentiate these kinds of incredibly irregular functions. They have no classical meaning, and attempts to work with them often lead to solutions that just diverge to infinity.
Which is a big red flag in math.
A very big red flag. Means something's fundamentally wrong with the approach.
That really lays out the core challenge. To make this even more tangible, can you give us a specific example, an equation that really stumped classical mathematicians? And tell us why it was such a formidable opponent.
Certainly. A classic example, a famous one, is the Kardar-Parisi-Zhang equation, the KPZ equation.
KPZ.
It describes how interfaces grow and roughen over time. Think of like a flame front spreading or maybe a crystal forming, its surface getting rougher.
Right, I can picture that.
Formally, it includes a term that represents how the interface tries to smooth itself out, diffusion, basically. And then there's a nonlinear term that's the real troublemaker and that space-time white noise we just talked about.
The troublemaker term, what does it do?
It involves squaring the spatial derivative of the solution itself. So the solution H describes the height of the interface. This term looks at how steep the interface is, the derivative, xh, and then squares that steepness.
Okay, squaring the slope. Why is that so bad?
Because the solution h itself, driven by the noise, is already incredibly rough. Its spatial derivative h becomes even rougher. So rough, in fact, it's not even a proper function in the classical sense. And when you try to square something that's already that pathologically irregular, the operation becomes ill-posed. You inevitably produce infinities. It just doesn't make sense classically.
Even if it seems okay locally.
Yeah, even though the KPZ equation might seem, quote, a locally subcritical in one spatial dimension, meaning it looks sort of manageable at small scales, the solutions would just diverge if not handled with extreme care. Classical methods couldn't tame it.
So the KPZ equation really brings this problem of roughness into sharp focus. Was this an isolated challenge, or did other important equations hit the same wall?
Oh no, KPZ was just one prominent example. We saw similar issues with the continuous parabolic Anderson model, or PAM.
PAM, right.
Yeah.
What does that describe?
It models how particles, maybe heat or pollutants, diffuse in a random environment. Think of stuff spreading through a patchy landscape.
Okay.
Classically, PAM became ill-posed, it broke down, in spatial dimensions 2 and 3.
So not just 1D problems.
Exactly. And then there's the dynamical FAM model. That's a cornerstone in quantum field theory. It also presented significant challenges for classical approaches, again, because of these inherent rough elements, these singular inputs, and the nonlinearities.
So it sounds like mathematicians tried various things before regularity structures came along. What were some of those earlier attempts, and why weren't they enough?
There were several valiant attempts, absolutely. Each had its own merits, but also, unfortunately, its own limitations. One technique was called Wick ordering.
Wick ordering.
Yeah. It tried to fix problematic products like that square in KPZ by essentially subtracting off the infinite part associated with the Gaussian noise, rearranging things in a specific way.
Did it work?
It helped in some cases, but it was often like playing whack-a-mole. You'd fix one divergence, but then new, deeper issues, what are called subdivergences, would just pop up elsewhere, especially in more complex problems.
So not a general fix?
Not general enough, no.
Yeah.
And it wasn't clear how to apply it to all the kinds of nonlinear terms you encounter. Another really significant development was controlled rough paths theory.
Rough paths. So
this was, and still is, incredibly useful for certain types of equations. Some Burgers type equations, even parts of the KPZ equation, could be handled. It provided a rigorous way to make sense of paths driven by rough noise.
But there's a but, isn't there?
The major drawback is that it's, well, intrinsically a one-dimensional theory.
Only works in one spatial dimension.
Pretty much. It's really limited to stochastic evolution equations with just one space variable. But, you know, we live in a 3D world. Many physical phenomena unfold across multiple dimensions. So that was a big constraint.
Right.
Any other attempts?
More recently, there was work using a novel theory of controlled distributions for the PAM equation in two dimensions. This built on some pretty sophisticated ideas, like Boney's paraproduct calculus.
It sounds complex.
It was a significant step forward, definitely a far-reaching generalization of related ideas. But even that really highlighted the pressing need for something more comprehensive, a universally applicable framework.
Okay, so previous methods had their limits, bumping up against these fundamental issues of roughness and dimensionality. This brings us then to the core of this deep dive. The theory of regularity structures.
Exactly. This is where things get really interesting.
How does this fundamentally change how mathematicians even describe the regularity or smoothness of a function or distribution? What's the big paradigm shift here? The main idea, the absolute core concept, is to redefine regularity in a way that's adapted to the problem at hand. We move beyond the traditional way of thinking about smoothness,
which is usually about how close something lifts to a polynomial. Like a Taylor expansion.
Precisely. Classical Taylor expansions approximate functions locally using polynomials, linear terms, quadratic terms, and so on. Regularity structures uses something like local Taylor expansions, but they can include elements of negative homogeneity.
Negative homogeneity. Okay, that sounds fascinating. Almost counterintuitive. What does that mean?
It means we're allowing building blocks in our local description that are fundamentally rougher than constants, rougher than anything a classical Taylor expansion could represent. Think about white noise. It's so irregular. It's like having fluctuations at all scales. Negative homogeneity lets us capture that.
So these aren't just less smooth functions in the usual sense. It's like a whole different category of roughness that classical math couldn't even describe properly.
Exactly. Think of it this way. Classical math tries to approximate jagged curves with smooth polynomial pieces. That works okay if the curve is ultimately based on something smooth.
But not for things driven by pure noise.
Right. For white noise, for truly rough phenomena, it's like trying to describe a coastline or a fractal using only circles and straight lines. It's just not the right language. Negative homogeneity allows us to build a mathematical description that inherently embraces and quantifies that infinite jaggedness, that roughness, right from the start.
You're building the roughness into the description itself.
Precisely. It's like being able to mathematically model the fractal structure directly, not just approximate it clumsily.
How does it do that? What's the machinery?
It uses an abstract algebraic framework. Imagine creating a custom mathematical language specifically for roughness. You need a few key components.
Okay.
First, a special ruler for roughness. This is an index set, usually denoted A, which keeps track of the degree of regularity, the homogeneity, of each piece of your problem. Crucially, this set A can include negative numbers.
The negative homogeneities.
Right. Second, you need a dictionary of rough building blocks. This is a model space, T, a graded vector space. Think of it as a collection of abstract symbols or placeholders representing all the necessary rough components, like the basis vectors for your rough function. It's analogous to the space of all polynomials in classical Taylor theory, but much richer.
Okay, symbols for roughness.
And third, you need a grammar for how these blocks relate across space. This is a structure group G. It's a set of linear operators on your model space T that tell you how the coefficients of your rough expansion change when you shift your point of view, when you move the center of your local description. Similar to how Taylor coefficients change, but adapted for this abstract rough setting.
Wow. Okay. That's quite an abstract setup. You've got the index set, the model space, the structure group. How do you connect this abstract language back to the actual concrete equations and distributions we care about?
That is the crucial step. And it's done through what are called models. A model is the bridge. It takes these abstract symbols in our model space T and maps them to concrete functions or distributions defined on our familiar spacetime, like F.
So the model makes it real.
Exactly. And the genius here, the really subtle part, is that the space of possible models has an intrinsic nonlinearity. That structure allows the models themselves to encode the delicate cancellations needed to make sense of the infinities that arise in these singular problems. It automatically handles some of the messy interactions.
Okay, so the model translates abstract roughness into something concrete and handles some of the infinities. What do we call the objects described this way?
We call them model distributions. An object F is a model distribution if, locally around any point X, it looks like a specific linear combination of those abstract building blocks from T with coefficients determined by the model. It's our rough object described within this new language.
And can we then turn that back into something usable, like a standard distribution?
Yes. That's where a cornerstone result comes in the reconstruction theorem. It's fundamental. It essentially says that for any model distribution F, up to a certain regularity, though, there's a unique continuous way to map it back to an actual distribution, let's call it RF, living in a standard space of distributions, like Holder spaces, say.
R for reconstruction.
Exactly. And crucially, this reconstructed distribution, RF, is locally approximated by the jet, the local description provided by the model distribution FX. It links the abstract description back to the concrete world of analysis.
That sounds like the aha moment. The reconstruction theorem gives a rigorous meaning to these locally modeled rough objects. It lets us think of them as actual distributions we can potentially work with.
Precisely. It's like the black box that performs that first essential step. It allows us to describe a huge class of functions and distributions that locally look like these combinations of abstract, potentially very rough elements defined by the model. It makes the description concrete and mathematically sound.
Okay, that's a huge conceptual leap. We can describe these incredibly rough objects rigorously, give them a proper mathematical identity using model distributions and the reconstruction theorem. But the million-dollar question is, can we actually do math with them?
Yes.
Can we multiply them, compose them with functions, integrate them, operations that were previously impossible or ill-defined for these rough distributions without things just blowing up?
Yes, absolutely. And this is where the theory becomes truly powerful and operational. It provides a complete calculus for these modeled distributions.
A whole new calculus for the rough world.
You could put it that way. A major achievement is multiplication. As you know, one of the big drawbacks, a much lamented drawback of classical distribution theory, is that you generally can't multiply distributions. There's no canonical way.
Right. Schwartz showed that's impossible in general.
Exactly. But within the framework of regularity structures, the theory provides a canonical way of multiplying model distributions. It works by essentially postulating or defining the products between the abstract basis elements in our model space T first. Once you've defined those abstract products, the theory tells you how to multiply the model distributions built from them.
So you build the multiplication rules into the abstract structure itself.
That's the idea. It overcomes that classical limitation in a way that's consistent with the roughness. We can also do composition with smooth functions. This is possible for certain types or sectors of regularity structures that behave more like functions locally.
Okay, multiplying, composing. What about solving equations? That usually involves integration, right? Like with Green functions.
Absolutely crucial. And the theory provides abstract integration maps and Schotter estimates. These are the tools needed for solving PDEs. They allow us to represent the action of convolution with singular kernels, things like the heat kernel or the Green's function for the Laplacian.
Which typically improve regularity. They smooth things out.
Right. These integration maps act on the model distributions, and the Schotter estimates tell you precisely how much regularity you gain, again, within the abstract framework. What's particularly clever and powerful is the multi-level nature of these estimates. It's not just a statement about the overall smoothness, but about how every layer in the local expansion behaves under integration.
Wow. And differentiation. Can we differentiate these things too?
Yes. The theory includes abstract gradients. These operators act on the model distributions, and they are defined such that applying the abstract derivative and then reconstructing gives the same result as reconstructing first and then taking the standard derivative. So RDF equals di RF.
So it's a fully consistent system. Description, multiplication, composition, integration, differentiation, all for these incredibly rough objects.
That's the goal and largely the achievement. It provides a coherent mathematical universe for them.
This sounds incredibly powerful. Almost like a magic wand for these rough equations.
Mm-hmm.
But it also sounds like there could still be a catch, maybe.
Mm.
When we try to solve these real-world problems, we often use approximations, right?
Yeah.
Like smoothing out that white noise input slightly.
Yeah, that's standard practice.
Do the solutions obtained via regularity structures still diverge when we use those approximations and then try to take the limit as the approximation gets better? Does that divergence problem just reappear?
Often, yes, it does reappear at that stage. If you just naively construct the model Z corresponding to a smoothed out noise XA and then let the smoothing limb go to zero, that sequence of model Z often fails to converge. The constants involved might blow up.
Ah, so the infinities are still lurking.
They are lurking, but the theory provides a profound and elegant way to handle this. This is where the concept of the renormalization group comes in.
Renormalization. That sounds like something out of quantum physics.
It has deep roots there, absolutely. In this context, the renormalization group is a specific, natural, finite dimensional group of transformations that acts on the space of our admissible models. Think of it as a set of allowed recalibrations for our models.
Okay, transformations on the models.
Yeah.
How does that help?
The key insight is that even though the original sequence of model Z might diverge, we can often find a sequence of these renormalization transformations, let's call them M, from this group, such that when we apply them to our diverging sequence...
You apply mean to Z?
Exactly. The renormalized sequence, M, actually does converge to a well-defined, finite, unique limiting model, let's call it Z, as the smoothing in goes to zero.
So if I'm understanding this correctly, it's like... the raw approximations are diverging, but we put on a special pair of glasses, the renormalization map, MEMA, that corrects for the infinite wiggles introduced by the approximation.
Mm-hmm.
It lets us see the true underlying finite solution Z.
That's a perfect analogy. That's exactly the conceptual picture. The renormalization transformation E precisely cancels out the diverging parts that arise purely from the singular nature of the limit, leaving behind the physically meaningful finite part.
And what does this mean for the solution? How do we interpret this renormalized limit?
It allows us to reinterpret the objects constructed by our theory, the solutions built using the limiting model Z, as limits of solutions to equations that have been slightly modified. They're modified by the addition of a finite number of diverging counterterms.
Counterterms.
Yes, these are terms added to the original equation that also involve the smoothing parameter add I and diverge as grows to zero, but in just the right way to cancel the divergences coming from the nonlinearity and the noise. This whole procedure makes the dependence on the specific choice of approximation, the specific way you smooth the noise, disappear in the limit.
So it's about finding the right interpretation of the singular equation.
Exactly. It's a very common viewpoint in physics literature. Think about stochastic differential equations. You have the choice between Itô or Stratonovich calculus. They represent different physical interpretations, different ways of defining the product of the solution and the noise, and they lead to different but equally well-defined solutions. Renormalization here is similar. It's a mathematically rigorous way to select a specific, meaningful interpretation of the singular SPDE by specifying how to handle the divergences via these counterterms.
So, putting it all together, by building this entire machinery, this new way to describe regularity with negative homogeneity, this custom calculus for rough functions, and this powerful renormalization group to handle the divergences from approximations, we can now rigorously solve problems that were once thought completely intractable.
That's the outcome, yes.
It's like mathematicians finally forged the tools needed to tame these truly wild equations found in nature.
Exactly. This theoretical framework allows us, really for the first time, to give a mathematically rigorous meaning to many interesting stochastic PDEs arising in physics. We can go back to those problems we mentioned earlier.
Like the KPZ equation.
Yes, the KPZ equation. The theory can now make sense of it rigorously, providing existence and uniqueness results, and it can handle generalizations potentially in higher dimensions where other tricks definitely fail.
And the parabolic Anderson model, PM.
The continuous parabolic Anderson model, PAM, remember it was classically ill-posed in dimensions 2 and 3. Well, it's now understood how to renormalize it using these techniques in spatial dimensions 2 and 3. The theory provides rigorous convergence results for specific approximations of PAM in D2, for instance.
Fantastic. What about that quantum field theory model?
The dynamical OMOS.
Yeah.
This is a major challenge. Regularity structures provide a rigorous construction for this model, connecting directly to major achievements in constructive quantum field theory. Again, there are theorems proving convergence of approximations after renormalization.
And even things like fluid dynamics.
Potentially. The theory offers a framework for tackling the Navier-Stokes equations driven by very singular forcing, S and S. Classically, these are ill-posed in dimension 2 if the forcing is like space-time white noise. The theory suggests that the problem should be solvable after renormalization for spatial dimensions less than 4.
This really sounds like more than just solving individual equations one by one. It seems like a powerful, unified black box or framework for a huge range of problems. Is that fair? A systematic way to understand these fundamental rough phenomena.
Absolutely. That's one of its great strengths. It's a very general theory. It provides a systematic approach to analyzing a very large class of semilinear PDEs driven by some very singular, typically random input. It brings a new level of rigor, a common language, and a unified understanding to phenomena across incredibly diverse fields.
From statistical physics, fluid dynamics, quantum field theory.
Exactly. It gives us a consistent mathematical language to describe and, importantly, to interact with the inherent randomness and roughness that we see almost everywhere in the natural world.
What an incredible deep dive into the world of regularity structures. It's amazing to see how we went from grappling with the inherent, seemingly impossible roughness of nature
to establishing this powerful new mathematical language, this whole calculus, specifically designed to describe it and work with it.
It really feels like this theory doesn't just provide answers to old questions.
No, it does more than that. It reshapes our perception of what is mathematically possible. It offers a profound new lens, a new way of thinking, through which we can comprehend these complex, irregular phenomena that really shape our physical world. It shows how the seemingly intractable, the infinitely messy, can actually become precisely defined and, in a way, elegantly understood.
So wrapping this up, what does this all mean for you, listening in?
Well, I think it means.
It means that even the most seemingly chaotic or messy aspects of reality, the things that look like pure noise, can yield to elegant, deep mathematical understanding.
That's right. There can be structure, precise structure, even within the chaos.
It offers you a unique perspective, maybe a shortcut, to appreciating the hidden mathematical structures governing so much of our universe. And it leaves us with a final thought to mull over. Consider how many other seemingly intractable problems out there, maybe in climate modeling, understanding turbulence fully, or perhaps deep in the quantum mechanics of fundamental particles. Problems often rooted in rough inputs or singular behavior might now be within reach.
With the right mathematical framework, perhaps one built on these ideas.
Exactly. What new frontiers of understanding could this kind of thinking open next? What predictive power might we unlock for phenomena we once just dismissed as too random, too chaotic to ever properly model?